Hi, everyone. We're so happy you can join us for our business article today. And we are on page 22 of your advanced magazine. If you have it with you, you might want to turn to it. We're going to be actually kind of looking at a book and looking at the person that wrote the book and looking at an organization that is quite famous, Microsoft. And to discuss the article with me, I have two gentlemen in the studio.
Simon.
And Josh.
So, guys, what do you think about this article and this book, actually, that he's written, Hit Refresh?
To be honest, Microsoft is a company I don't spend too much time thinking about anymore, and I think that's a big part of the issue that they've been trying to address in the last few years through this guy, Nadella's work.
For me, it's interesting to get sort of, like they say here, a glimpse behind the curtain of Microsoft, and mainly because I grew up in Washington State, and one of the claims to fame for Washington State is that it's the home of Bill Gates, and I lived in a part of Seattle, was not too far away from Bill Gates' mansion, so it's always been kind of like the king on the hill, really, and not really knowing a lot about his personal life or even a lot about what goes on inside the company, but I am also very familiar with Windows because I have to use it every day. So this is a little bit of an interesting, like they said, glimpse behind the curtain or the internal workings of what's going on in Microsoft.
Well, that's the thing, though. With Microsoft, you tend to think about Bill Gates, who hasn't actually been in charge of the company for years and years, and you tend to think about things like Microsoft Windows or Microsoft Office, which are also products that have been around for a really long time. And so I think that's really what they're getting at with the title here, Hit Refresh.
Right. And actually, that's how familiar I am with Microsoft is I use their products. And we see that it's kind of taking a different turn here, hopefully, with new leadership. And so let's see what he has to say. We are on page 22, as I said before, and we're going to read this first column, the left-hand column, and down to about the middle of the second column as well. And if you have your digital device, I recommend that you turn to the article and read along with it. There's some interesting vocabulary, and he has some interesting thoughts about how this has all come about.
Hit Refresh. Microsoft's Nadella gives some glimpses behind the curtain in Hit Refresh. The day he introduced himself to his Microsoft coworkers as their new chief executive, Satya Nadella knew he faced a skeptical audience. Employees were demoralized. Internal polls showed they were unhappy with the direction of the company, and they didn't believe Nadella could fix things. Many felt the company was losing its soul, Nadella writes. We needed a renewal, a renaissance. Nadella details his efforts to spark that renaissance at Microsoft in Hit Refresh, a book that is, by turns, semi-official history of Microsoft, memoir and rumination on the state of technology and society. His book comes after he's helped stabilize a company that, just a few years ago, was seen at risk of sliding into irrelevance. The move toward web-delivered software that started under Nadella's predecessor has gained steam, with analysts now charting a future for Microsoft beyond the PC age. In Nadella's telling, that wasn't accomplished by specific strategic decisions as much as by the curation of a culture more open to new ideas and risks. And for a company long reluctant to admit its shortcomings outside the walls, Nadella's account paints a frank picture of a diseased corporate culture. Each employee had to prove to everyone that he or she knew it all and was the smartest person in the room, he writes of the company's famously meeting-heavy habits. Hierarchy and pecking order had taken control, and spontaneity and creativity had suffered.
Okay, so we are meeting Satya Nadella here, and He doesn't seem like he had a good first day at work, does it, Simon?
No, it doesn't. He tells us that he met his new coworkers, and he told them he was going to be their CEO, and they were a skeptical audience. So when a group of people are skeptical, it basically means they're not sure they want to believe what you're saying.
Have you ever been skeptical about anything?
Sure, I think
like all the time.
Has.
I like to meet most things with what I call a healthy dose or a healthy amount of skepticism, meaning that I do believe that people do sort of present things in terms that are idealized and not necessarily so realistic. And so you have to kind of look at them for what they are and understand that it may not be everything that people are presenting.
Okay.
So this poor new CEO was standing in front of the employees, and they weren't sure that they trusted him. And it goes on to say that in the second paragraph. It says they were demoralized, which means they were kind of depressed. They didn't have good morale. And when we say morale like this, we're not actually talking about morals, meaning things that are right or things that are wrong. We're actually talking about mood and whether people are feeling positive or negative.
Right. It says here, well, the definition says you've lost your confidence, enthusiasm, and hope. So the way the company has been going has led them to become, you know, they really didn't have any hope, it seems like. And they found this out through internal polls or surveys that were taken, and it looks like that they were very unhappy with the direction of the company. And they also didn't believe he could do anything about it. That in itself would be kind of demoralizing. You don't know maybe the direction that you're going to be going on. It says here, many felt the company was losing its soul. That's kind of an interesting statement.
Yeah, usually when we say an organization is losing its soul, we're kind of tying that to this idea that the organization no longer has a clear purpose or clear goals that it's trying to achieve. And from what I know of Microsoft, that very much was true for a period of time. Because technology had changed, and they had sort of failed to keep up with that.
We have three kind of interesting words here that we're going to take a look at. He says that, well, Nadella writes, we needed a renewal, a renaissance, and then we see the title of his book, Hit Refresh. So we were just talking about the differences between these words. A renewal and a renaissance is kind of the same. Right?
Yeah, it's kind of the same. So Renaissance, I think a lot of times we think of a particular period in science and art where there was interest in rediscovering and renewing and making more important the arts and the sciences, which is somewhat similar here to this idea of renewing something, but it's not exactly also refreshing something.
Yes. Now, the difference between that and refresh, or renaissance, renewal, and refresh is what, Simon?
Well, the trick here is that all of these words sort of take on different meanings depending mm-hmm. on how you use them. So quite literally, all these words are, you know, rewords. So we're making something fresh or we're making something new again. But there are sort of these subtle or small differences in the feelings the words give you. So the word refresh specifically has a very different meaning when we're talking about using the internet. We refresh a page when we want to see what the latest version of the page is. So when we want to update the information on the page. But when we renew something, it means we basically want to make it new again, and it doesn't have that same internet connected meaning. And renaissance, like Josh said, it's a time of sort of making things new, but I would add to that that it's also a time of new creativity and new ideas.
Right. That was the Renaissance period and what it really was all about, especially in the arts and sciences. So he really sees that there needs to be big change in a lot of different directions in this company. And he tells us about it in his book, actually. It says he details his effort to spark that Renaissance at Microsoft. So we can see that this book really is going to be revealing a lot about the company culture and about what happened and what he really was trying to do. To spark something means to try to start something. And usually that word spark comes from fire. So if you get a spark, It's kind of like when you light a match and you get something and start a forest on fire. And that's kind of what he was trying to do. Start Microsoft on fire, so to speak. And he says it turns out to be a semi-official history of Microsoft. Did you guys know that?
No. But that makes sense because he's the CEO. So, you know, he would approve any official history.
Well, I thought it was kind of interesting that it hadn't been done before this, you know, when Bill Gates was in charge of Microsoft. But it looks like he's gone back over the history, and it's a memoir and a rumination on the state of technology and society. That's kind of a mouthful.
Yeah. So a memoir, of course, is a book where you write down the things you remember about an experience or about a thing. So it's a book of remembering. And a rumination is when you sort of think about something for a period of time. Usually, actually, you hear this word when you're talking about animals on farms.
Right. That's what that's what came to my mind.
Yeah, because some kinds of animals, they kind of eat food, but they kind of chew on it for a while, and it looks like they're thinking about it. And so we use this word in the same way. We actually use the phrase chew on something when we're talking about thinking about something for a while. Like you might say, let me chew on that idea for a while and I'll get back to you. And we're referring to this ruminating process where you think about something for a while.
And we see here that it says that this book is by turns all three of these things. So it kind of alternates between being a history, a memoir, and a rumination about different things in the book.
Right. And actually, he doesn't really say it's Microsoft. I mean, that's what it is about. But it says it's on the state of technology and society, which I thought was pretty interesting. It seems like it's a slightly different perspective, but within the company.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we see that he wrote this after, or it says his book comes after, and he actually kind of did what he set out to do, even though the employees were very skeptical at the time. He helped stabilize the company, right, Josh?
Yeah, so and doesn't go into detail here yet about what was going on with Microsoft at the time. We just know that at the time when he started that the company was in trouble, and at least the employees were did not have a high morale. They were demoralized. But then he came in and stabilized the company, so stopped it from sort of sliding or falling apart, and that just a few years ago, it was also just sliding into this irrelevance. So going from something that's being relevant to something that's not as important anymore.
I like that phrase, sliding into irrelevance. I think that can happen quite easily if you don't really, especially in this industry, if you don't really stay on top of what's happening in the world or in society or in the field of technology, you know, I think it would be very easy for a company to slide into irrelevance, don't you?
Yeah, and if you know a little bit about the Microsoft story over maybe the last 10 or 15 years, you can sort of see that. Like, there was a time when one of the things that everybody had to have on their new computer was Microsoft Office, right? Because if you were mm-hmm. a student or if you were working, you sort of needed it. But now, if you're not in an industry like ours where you're publishing things, a lot of people get by with just open source software and they don't think it's worth paying for. And I mean, you'll remember too, a few years ago when you bought your new iPhone, you couldn't actually use Microsoft Word or Microsoft Excel on the phone. And so in a lot of ways, technology and the way people were using software had kind of moved beyond what Microsoft was doing, and so it was becoming irrelevant. But of course now, a lot of those things have changed.
Right. Well, I think it also is because we've seen technology change from, you know, Microsoft is from the PC era, basically, and we've moved way beyond that. People don't even really talk about PCs anymore. So we see here that he helped stabilize it in the company and also give them kind of new direction. It says the move toward web-delivered software that started under Nadella's predecessor has gained steam. And analysts now are doing something new. They are charting what kind of future for Microsoft, Josh?
Well, they're just charting a future that goes beyond the PC age, so keeping them relevant in this age of new developments.
I think with a big company like Microsoft, that would be very difficult to do. Large companies are sometimes, you know, very hard to turn. We often picture them as an ocean tanker or a ship that we are slowly turning in the ocean. And it seems like that was the job that he had, was to turn Microsoft into a new direction to become more relevant. And according to Nadella, Josh?
Well, according to Nadella, it wasn't accomplished by a specific strategic decision as much as the curation of a culture that is more open to new ideas and risks. So when you curate something, you sort of like manage a collection, right? And so he's managing this collection of a culture that is more open to new ideas in order to make maybe that ship turn a little bit faster.
So the way that this is worded makes it seem like in the past they weren't open to new ideas and risks even, right? Their culture, what we can see from the next paragraph, it says that it was for a company long reluctant to admit its shortcomings outside its wall. He paints a frank picture of a diseased corporate culture. That doesn't sound very...
positive.
Yeah, positive.
Not at all.
That's a good word.
Yeah.
What do you think was going on there?
Well, I mean, actually, the thing is, for those of our listeners who are followers of the tech industry, actually, all of what they are saying here is very clear about Microsoft, because for years and years, like the value of the company stayed kind of low. Like it was sort of stalled, and that has changed in recent years. It's begun growing again and things like that. But, it's been pretty clear that something was wrong with Microsoft, or it was pretty clear for a long time that something was wrong with Microsoft.
Well, he's calling it their corporate culture was the one that was actually causing the problem. I mean, when you use a word like disease corporate culture, that's pretty negative.
Well, sure, but even that, you know, you think back on movies of recent years that sort of compare Apple to Microsoft or Steve Jobs to Bill Gates and things like that. And Apple comes off kind of looking like this amazing, innovative, creative, you know, rock star of a company that can do no wrong, whereas Microsoft's always kind of like the ho-hum kind of... not very creative company. Yeah, I mean, I remember years ago they used to have those ads with those two people who were representing a PC and an Apple. Do you remember those? And the Apple guy's kind of cool and the PC's sick because he's got a virus, or the PC's slow because he's not working very fast. And those popular culture comparisons were in a lot of ways very representative, I think, of the different corporate cultures, or at least the way the companies wanted us to think about their corporate cultures.
Okay.
And so here, then, he is painting this frank picture of really being very honest about the fact that Microsoft did have this sort of, reputation of being a large, kind of lumbering and not very innovative company, like Simon says, and that they weren't very honest about it, but then he really had to be like, no, this is a problem that is really making a lot of difficulties for our ability to move forward.
I thought this next paragraph was very telling. I mean, he kind of describes what it's like to go to a meeting and, you know, each employee had to prove to everyone in the room that he or she knew it all and was the smartest person in the room. And then this next part of it, he writes of the company's famously meeting-heavy habit. So it sounds like they had a lot of meetings, but everybody was trying to one-up everybody else in the room.
Well, they did create PowerPoint, right? So you'd imagine they would use it a fair bit.
A lot of PowerPoint meetings.
A lot of meetings.
And a lot of power.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, and a meeting-heavy habits, okay? So they had a lot of meetings as well. That's what this means. And it looks like hierarchy and pecking order had taken control. This is an interesting phrase. What's a pecking order?
So a pecking order actually has a very similar meaning to hierarchy. A hierarchy, of course, just means that people are organized into different levels based on power or responsibility or things like that. And a pecking order, that phrase actually comes again from the farm, where we talk about chickens and the order in which they are allowed to eat, or the order which they eat. So the most powerful chickens eat first, and they take the best food for themselves. And the smaller chickens kind of get pushed out of the way and have to eat what's left over.
Okay, so that's an interesting phrase. We often use that with companies, so you know what your position is within the company and what kind of power you may or may not have. And here it says that hierarchy and pecking order had taken control, and the result was that spontaneity and creativity had suffered. So spontaneity, Josh, do you consider yourself to be spontaneous?
In certain situations, I am definitely very spontaneous. And so a spontaneity or a spontaneous person is someone who can do something in a natural way, but also do something without any kind of planning and kind of what we call spur of the moment. Just as things happen, they can come up with something in order to deal with the situation.
But not only had that suffered, also creativity had suffered. And I think that going back to the previous paragraph, that clearly explains why. If everybody is trying to show that they're the smartest person in the room, you don't want to make a mistake. You don't want to be made to. So we can see why spontaneity and creativity suffered in this organization. Nobody would be willing to put themselves at risk for appearing to be stupid if everybody was trying to prove themselves to be the smartest person in the room. Well, let's continue on. Let's read to the bottom of this page. We have like a couple of small paragraphs left, so follow along with us in your magazine.
From cricket player to CEO. Growing up in India's Andhra Pradesh state, Nadella writes, he was a less-than-perfect student, often more concerned with cricket than his studies. Nadella, who came to the U.S. for graduate school and took a job at Microsoft in 1992, was still thinking cricket long into adulthood. He was fiddling with a cricket ball during the phone call in January 2014, when Microsoft chairman John Thompson told him the board of directors wanted to offer him the top job.
Well, I would say that this is quite a large switch in occupation, so to speak, if you go from being a cricket player to a CEO of a company. So we see that Della is from India, right? And what kind of a student was he, Josh?
Well, he was less than perfect, which means that he was not a good student.
Yeah, so it doesn't mean that he was an A-minus student, okay? We're probably looking at average student who didn't really care about his studies. He was often more concerned with cricket than his studies. And then he came to the U.S. or went to the U.S. for graduate school. And when did he start working at Microsoft?
Well, here he took a job at Microsoft in 1992.
Okay, so he's been there for quite some time, actually. And I love this sentence or this phrase. He was still thinking cricket long into adulthood. So he'd never left his love for cricket behind when he moved to the United States. And in fact, what was he doing when he was offered this position?
Oh, it says he was fiddling with a cricket ball. So fiddling really just means kind of holding or playing with something in your hand. And so he was kind of holding this cricket ball when he got a phone call in January 2014, that was telling him he was being offered a job, the top job at Microsoft.
Do you think he was, like, kind of excited about it when he heard it, if he was just thinking about cricket? I mean, this is kind of a lot of responsibility to be offered the CEO of a company like this when your mind is on sports.
I think he probably dropped the cricket ball and then left it behind him forever and moved on.
You don't think he still plays cricket? Well, what do you think? I mean, how can somebody go from being a cricket player to the CEO of a company? Is this like the all-American dream here that we're talking about?
Well, it tells us he'd been working at Microsoft for quite a while because he got a job at Microsoft in 1992 and he received this call in 2014. So he'd actually been working there for quite a long time. I think when it says, you know, his interest in cricket or being a cricket player, I think that was probably not so much his job as one of his big interests, the things that he was thinking about all the time.
So we can go back to our first paragraph and see that actually when he introduced himself to Microsoft coworkers as their new chief executive, they already knew him, right? And they were looking at him very skeptically as he told them that he was going to be doing this job. So what does that tell us about the people that he's working with? They didn't really trust maybe that he could get this job done? What do you think?
Well, we know from our last section that it was a very political environment, right? Because we mm-hmm. use those words like hierarchy and pecking order. But we also know from earlier in that section that they were probably used to making strategic decisions at the top and kind of passing them down. And we know that because he said he drew sort of a contrast by saying that what he'd done was curation of the culture more than making decisions and pushing them on everyone else. And so I think probably they were not eager to see other people promoted around them.
Probably not. And the likelihood is that if they saw any kind of promotion, it's just because he's fitting into the hierarchy and not necessarily because he's really going to be able to turn the company around. Although in his book, he talks about how he does end up being able to do that.
Okay. Yeah. And let's take a look on page 22 at the top here. We have a little section that says an element of truth. And there was a cartoon that went viral and portrayed Microsoft's business groups aiming guns at each other. And that nagged at Nadella, but he acknowledged it had an element of truth to it. So it looks like they were fighting within and with one another. And if you're aiming a gun at somebody, it means you don't really want them to succeed either. And then he said that, that some employees had started to internalize Microsoft's tarnished image. They started to believe that the caricatures that were being painted outside, and he said that is one of the most dangerous things that can happen, really. So, you know, if you're believing that what is being said about you is really true about you, and maybe it's not really, but they're thinking that it is, that really does seem to be a dangerous position to take, doesn't it?
Sure.
Yeah, I don't think you ever want to, you know, believe the bad things that you hear and then make that true about yourself.
Yeah. Well, we're going to continue our look into Hit Refresh tomorrow and see what kind of things that Nadella has accomplished since he took over as CEO of Microsoft. So we hope that you'll join us again for the second day of our article. Well, it's time to say goodbye. We hope to see you then. Bye for now.
Goodbye. Goodbye.